Welcome, Green Future Growers, Progressive Radio Network listeners, and anybody who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today, it is Wednesday, June 27, 2018. It is a beautiful day here in Montana. It's been gorgeous June. And I am so thrilled to introduce this guest because I was just visiting my mom in New York and I took this book out of the library called... I took this book out, Evelyn Haddon's Beautiful No-Mow Yards. And in the beginning of the book is this incredible introduction by Susan Harris from Garden Rant. And so I reached out to her and she's on the air with me already. Like this was just the other day. So I know I've been looking at her website and she just has this amazing gardening writing career. Like she works with a nonprofit called Lawn Reform Coalition, nonprofit DC Gardens, the Good Gardening videos. I was just showing those to Mike when I got home. So here to talk about her mission to inspire and teach people to create sustainable and low maintenance ornamental gardens, including organic low input lawn care, is Susan Harris. So welcome to the show this afternoon, Susan.
Thank you so much. Welcome. I'll say hello from Maryland here.
From Maryland. Okay. And yep. Well, go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about your second career and about yourself.
Yes. Well, I grew up gardening a bit with my mother and grandmother were both gardeners, but I didn't really become obsessed, and you know what that's like, until I got some design help from a landscape architect that happened to be a neighbor. And it just clicked, you know, the payoff. Once I got a little help, the result would look so much better in my front yard. And I just have been a really intense gardener ever since. And so that was, that's about 15 years ago, and I became very active in my local garden club, and I was writing the newsletter, and then I heard that blogging was really easy, and the very next day, I started my first blog, so that kind of started me garden writing, and very soon thereafter, Amy Stewart contacted me and asked if I'd like to partner with her and one other writer to start this kind of fun project called Garden Rant, which is still going 12 years later. And our tagline, well, first of all, it has kind of an outrageous title. And then the tagline is just as outrageous. It's Uprooting the Gardening World, which I thought was pretty nervy. But the mission really was to have opinionated writing and to be able to say whatever we wanted and not have to worry about, you know, advertisers so that's been a lot of fun, and that's kind of led to being paid to write for magazines sometimes, and I've written for a lot of gardening companies in my area, and it's just kind of snowballed from there.
Well, so I call my audience Green Future Growers because I feel like they're just a little more than organic gardeners. Like, they're interested in, you know, changing our planet and a lot of the things that you're talking about. And they all kind of like, they don't necessarily have to have like a market farmer business, which my husband and I are kind of like trying to break into, or at least our goal is to grow as much food for us to last like a year. So we're like, we either like massively supplement our produce bill or try not to, like, you know, if we could grow enough potatoes and carrots and beets and like things that we eat a lot of to not have to buy those. But I know a lot of my listeners are really interested in, like, you know, they have green businesses and they, you know, whether it's selling organic ice cream or seeds or teaching education wise or building classroom gardens or building gardens in people's backyards. And blogging is a huge part of that, because even if you're a market farmer, you know, like sending out a blog post or a newsletter once. So do you want to just talk about that a little bit, like some secrets for like how somebody can get started becoming a successful blog writer?
Oh, gosh. Well, back then, this was in 2005, there were so few of us that we all knew each other, which is kind of cool. And then, you know, they even started getting together in person once a year, which the event they called the Garden Blogger Fling. And so that was...
Where's that at?
Well, it's in a different city every year.
Oh.
And so they just celebrated their 10th year by returning to Austin, which is where the first one was. But So I would say that between just reading each other's blogs and then getting together in person, we've become a pretty tight-knit group. But I honestly can't say that I do much blog reading anymore. It's, you know, after 12 years, well, now 13 years of blogging, I'm just posting once a week, and that's just about the right amount. I really enjoy having a place, a platform to post things. But I think there's some very good resources online about how to get blog readers and how to write specifically for the web, which is, you know, a little different. So I don't think there's much, you know, to know about it, except just jump in. I think I'd publish my first blog within about an hour, you know, that I started it. And then I've moved to a couple of different platforms. You know, the technology has changed, but I just find it so easy. And especially if you enjoy digital photography, it's a great place to show off your photos. And also say a little, I mean, of course, nowadays you can show them off in many places, including Instagram. But I like the blogging. I like blogging because it's not just photos. You can, you know, there's text. And I think I would always miss the text if I were just putting photos on Instagram.
Well, I think there's a lot of value in a lot of those things that you said, because just even starting off reading other people's blogs is a mm-hmm. good place to start. And then, you know, adding the photos in, which I mm-hmm. struggle with Instagram very similar. Like, I feel like one thing I've been noticing is, like, if I go on Instagram on my computer, there's a little more white space between the pictures. When I'm on my phone, my eyes just get tired. But then I was learning something today about these blue removing sunglasses or something. That kind of, maybe that could be part of it. But anyway, all right, well then, how about, like, do you want to talk about Garden Rant specifically? Like, it seems like it kind of has, like, an interesting tone to it.
Yeah, it has a little different tone. Well, first we started off ranting quite a bit. And the kinds of things that we would rant about would be, like, our least favorite homeowner association rules that, you know, require you to have turf grass, and or say our least favorite big chemical company that, you know, does a lot of advertising and pushes people to have the perfect lawn. Let's see, what else did we? We would often post about how our favorite gardening shows on TV were gone, which is certainly true. I learned to garden largely by watching HGTV and Paul James and his Gardening by the Yard show out of Tulsa, and they're all gone. I would say we had a lot to rant about at first, and then you know, you just kind of get, you can't keep repeating those same topics. So now we've gotten a little more political since the last presidential election, and with the changes coming to environmental law. So I would say we're kind of crossing that line. Typically, you don't see politics mentioned on garden blogs, but as long as it's plant related or you know, wildlife related, we'll occasionally go there. What else? But now I think we also have, like, long, you know, kind of stories, and some of our, we have seven of us now that are regular bloggers there, and some of them are just wonderful storytellers, and so. That's not the kind of thing I do, but I really love that about some of our contributors, that nice, really plantsmen, I would say, people who know a lot more than I do about plants are writing these wonderful stories. So that's what's happening there now.
Well, I might have to check that out, because, like my listeners know, I'm a pretty vocal activist and politics, because that's the one place I can be like on my podcast, you know, I can be me. Mm-hmm. So, and that's been the best thing about podcasting, is meeting my peeps, and how many of my guests have mm-hmm. or how many of my listeners have come on and been guests, and guests that have become listeners, and just it's just been the coolest way to connect with you. And that was the coolest thing when I went to New York, was meeting people that have been guests, like Elizabeth Weller and Aiden. Elizabeth Leonard and Aiden Weller, Aiden Feeney. I don't know, but at this Young's Farm place that I interviewed, and I went to the Brooklyn Grange mm-hmm. place that I interviewed, and just meeting people that I interviewed was just super fun. So Anyway, well, do you want to... So I kind of always start out the show asking about your very first gardening experience. I mean, I guess you kind of said with your mom, but like, oh, like, you know, I guess you were maybe a little kid. And like, what do you remember growing? And
I just remember that both my mother and grandmother had beautiful gardens. My mother also grew food as well as ornamentals. But my mother would rather weed than anything, I think. And I just saw the what it did for her, just emotionally, I think, just spending time in the garden. And so I did a lot of that with her. And then when, as an adult, like I say, I attempted to make my yard pretty, but I really needed some help from a professional to really kickstart it. But I have, I have just great, very happy memories from, I grew up in Central Virginia, and my mother had been in Des Moines, had been from Des Moines. And, here in Maryland, I can grow pretty much the same plants. And so there's just a nice family history that I'm continuing.
Cool. So is that how you learned how to garden organically then, from getting some help from somebody, from a professional? I totally love that, because like, not only just being a teacher, but like when I took guitar lessons, like all of a sudden learning how to play the guitar just like popped to life. Like it was just like magic overnight. Like having somebody there that's been there and can guide you is just huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I know Joe Lample, who you, I heard your podcast with him, and I'm a big fan of his. He was talking about how people learn to garden nowadays with the TV shows gone. And I think if you don't have someone in real life, one-on-one to teach you, that's kind of why I started the nonprofit, to find the very best YouTube videos that will teach people how to garden. And so I know a lot of people are helped by those. The thing about videos is, now if you can find the ones that are high quality, that are accurate, you can just pinpoint, put the search terms, the exact search terms in that at YouTube, and get your answer very quickly. So that's a great way. And also another one I've enjoyed as a professional is being a gardening coach for people. I did that for about 10, 12 years. So I would be the in-person teacher, right? I'd go to someone's yard and again, really jumpstart their garden with, sometimes I would give them design ideas or plant suggestions, or show them how to even put a plant in the ground. And especially pruning. Pruning is a very intimidating, I think, gardening job, and hard to learn. So I love teaching people to prune by, just jumping in and hacking away at their overgrown forsythia or whatever it is. And they're shocked at how much you're removing, but I really enjoy that. So I really love the one-on-one teaching that I frankly didn't get much of myself. But as I say, there used to be good TV shows that would supplement my learning, I would say. And Paul James is, who used to have this great gardening show, he was very much an organic gardener, and an ornamental. So because I don't grow food, I'm not a cook, and that's not my emphasis. But I learned so much from him about not just how to grow plants, but how to create a beautiful yard, a beautiful garden. So that's what did it for me.
So what would be like one tip that you would give somebody like on what they could do to make their yard more beautiful? Like, is there like one tip you could give listeners?
Well, I think to see either get some help, some professional design help, or even I would say, even if you don't have a budget to get professional design help, if you know someone who has a garden that you think is pretty, that you like their garden, ask if they would come to your garden and give you some tips. It's just, just another set of eyes. And it doesn't have to be a professionally trained set of eyes. It just could be an experienced gardener. So that would, I think that often helps people. And also to go as many garden tours as they can in their area would be very helpful too.
Nice. I like all of that. And that's, it's so timely because when I was in New York, I finally got my mom to open up my free garden course and give it a free set of eyes. And she definitely helped me make it better. I mean, I would probably have to spend the entire summer there for us to finish. Like, we never got past lesson one. We didn't finish lesson one. But she's such a natural teacher. She's like, well, you have to actually explain like this and like step by step. And you have too much of this and take that out. And so it does really help for sure to have a fresh set of eyes. So, well, do you want to tell us about your garden in Maryland then? Like something that that's grew well this year or is growing well?
What's going well? Well, it's funny to talk about my garden here in Maryland because I have my own garden, and then, but they're not very big. A couple of years ago, moved to a townhouse, so I've established these little front yard and little backyard, but it's not quite enough. So I've adopted five other gardens in my town, and so I kind of run all over town in my with all my tools in the back of my car. And so I have a bunch of gardens now because I couldn't stop. And so let's see. So what's growing well? So really, this especially in one of them that's a large along the front of a large, fairly large one-story office building. It was a blank slate, and I actually had a budget because they would just reimburse me for whatever I bought. So that's been really fun to see. The point being to create a really low maintenance garden that won't need a lot of attention from me, in a couple of years. So I've selected the ideas to. I think my favorite technique for a low maintenance, beautiful garden is mainly shrubs. So shrubs that won't get too big. But especially a combination of evergreen and the flowering ones. And the flowering ones tend to grow, some of them grow quite quickly. For example, my favorite shrub right now, my favorite shrub that I'm putting everywhere is called nine bark. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's native in this part of the world and it grows quite fast and has purple foliage. So it's a wonderful contrast with one of my other favorite shrubs, which is a chartreuse spirea. So they look just fabulous, and you've got all that color without having to rely on flowers. So you've got that long season of color in the leaves, and then there's some old evergreens that I've incorporated, and then just a little. So then the flower is like a little bunch of daffodils, or later in the year, maybe a bunch of black-eyed Susans or something. They're kind of like the relish, little pockets of perennials, kind of in between and. In between the shrubs. So that's my hope. That seems to be going well, and we'll see a couple of years down the road how much maintenance it really is. But I mean, I have created gardens before that were mainly shrubs, and I think it works. Have a good, maybe a good layer of mulch and a little drips and drabs of flowering perennials, but mainly shrubs. To me, looks great.
Oh, I like that. My mom, there was a house with black-eyed Susans across the street that really, I thought just, I don't know, they just look really dainty and really pretty. Well, how about, is there something you're excited to try different next year? Are you going to try new?
I would like to stop trying new things. I would like to try to stop creating new gardens. Because I need to cut back. So I just hope that these to add nothing more, frankly. I want to just take care of what I've got and stop adopting new gardens. I'm having a lot of fun teaching people in my community to garden and getting some working with the city crew to improve the way they maintain the city gardens. And so that's my focus right now, as opposed to I'm really thinking more about that than I am about plants, what to change in my own garden, frankly.
Well, I like that a lot too, because if you're kind of giving them some hints on how they can be more environmentally friendly. I mean, I've thought a lot about that because especially after just being in my mom's town where like its landscapers do all the work practically, they're at every block with every house and just all these people out there. And then, you know, her next door neighbors have the little flags that say, you know, don't walk your dog here for 24 hours. And just, you know, you kind of wonder. I mean, it's kind of weird because my mom's town smells so good. There's like tons of blooming shrubs. But I wonder if that they're putting these shrubs in, because I was kind of looking, I'm like, it is interesting that there aren't a lot of weeds. Like, they have a lot of mulch down and then they have these shrubs. And so I wonder if that's kind of why, kind of what you're saying is that it's low maintenance, if that's why they have that there, because it's very different landscape than where I am here in the foresty type of area. So I like that you're working with
Go ahead.
No, I just said I like that you're working with crews in town, helping them maintain the city gardens.
Well, I'm have to hold my tongue because I'm really kind of horrified by, you know, the road. They're still doing putting in dozens and dozens of annuals that need all kinds of fertilizing and irrigation and, you know, in full sun. And between that and a lot of weeding. And so then they've been pressured to cut back on the spraying, but they don't have an alternative weeding strategy because the landscape choices, the plant choices are really, you know, not taking, they're not preventing weeds. And so it's a mess. So part of what we're doing is not just different maintenance practices, but really redesign so that, you know, there's just a lot less maintenance to do going forward. That's the best we can do, but it's very gratifying. And then as we change some of the city landscapes, we can use that as a teaching opportunity to just show the residents what the change is and why.
This is awesome. I'm sure there are listeners whose, you know, heads are spinning and they're thinking, wow, I never thought about talking to like my local city people. And like, you know, maybe they're like, wow, maybe I should do a presentation, or maybe I should go see. And, you know, like, maybe they've never even thought, like, why are they planting those annuals there? Why are they, like, I hadn't really thought about it. Like, I know when I go to Eureka, I'm going to start thinking, why are they planting those particular plants where they're planting them? And even though lots of my guests have talked about native landscaping, I think a lot more about it at our place. Like, I hadn't really thought about, you know, what do they have planted at the post office, or what do they have? Like, I know they're like, I'm thinking in my head of like right by the historical village, there's a sign, you know, welcome to Eureka. And then there's another one out kind of towards the fairgrounds. Like, I'm going to look there and see what they have there. So, and that's like, one of the things I put in my free garden course is the big difference between perennials and annuals. I know Mike's taught me a lot about perennials with low maintenance, and I like that because there's days where I don't get to the garden for a week and it's nice to not have to water. And then once you put them in, they're just there. They keep coming back. They pop up in strange places, which is always fun. And just, I don't know. I like perennials a lot. Well, how about, oh, this was what I was going to ask. Have you seen that movie, Dare to Be Wild, about the girl, she wins like the Chelsea Flower Show in England?
No.
Oh, you got, it's on Netflix, I think. My mom just like stumbled upon it. And she's, it's about this real woman. She's the first woman to win, I think, or she just won it like in 2006 or 2000, like recently. And they made a movie about her already, and it's all about like native landscaping and just like how to beautify gardens and parks using a lot of what you're talking about. So check that out. Well, how about something that didn't work so well this season or last season, or just in general? Like, do you like, can you remember like something that didn't go the way you thought it was going to be?
Well, yeah, I have failed with every salvia I've ever tried. So I don't, they're just one of, even if they're hardy enough for Maryland, they just don't come back for me. So I'm giving up on salvia. And one of the gardens I'm creating this year, I got a lot of donated sedums, Autumn Joy, but the deer love them. So no more of those. So I went instead and I got a ground cover junipers. So the deer do not eat those. And junipers do really well here, and they are native. So, yeah, giving up on salvias and giving up on the tall sedums where there are deer I would say those are my most recent failures that I know of.
Well, deer can definitely be a I mean, we've pretty much learned that. The only thing that grows here that the deer don't eat are the peonies. But Mike has huge fences around everything because we just got frustrated trying to grow anything where the deer are. And our house is pretty surrounded by them because it's kind of like a sanctuary. Our neighbors are constantly shooting and things. So they like it here. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Hey, Green Future Growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So you just, it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today.
Seed Voyage makes it easy to connect home food growers with the eaters who appreciate the flavor and freshness of ultra-local produce. Sign up for free at seedvoyage.com as a grower and offer some of your delicious surplus to members in the community. You'll be able to share your passion and make a few bucks. Eaters, sign up and see the amazing things being grown all around you. It might be the best and only way to try those Cherokee purple tomatoes and black nebula carrots you've been reading about. Seed Voyage, a farm in every yard.
All right, well, this is like the part of the show that we call getting to the root of things. So, like, do you have a least favorite activity in the garden that you got to kind of force yourself to get out there and do?
Well, my least favorite is applying any product of any kind. So that's kind of why I don't use the term organic gardener for myself, particularly because I try to just avoid products, whether they're organic or synthetic, either one. I just, you know, even if they're harmless, I find it a hassle. I know I'm not a lazy gardener, but I just find going and buying some product that I have to spray or whatever, I just don't do it. So I'll just get rid of plants that, see, that's a nice difference between, if you're growing food, then, you know, maybe there's a payoff really in fighting the bugs or the diseases that are attacking your crops. But if it's ornamental, then, you know, I've always say, just get rid of it. You know, it's just not worth it. I don't want it. So the most I'll do is, the only thing I'll apply is mulch and what else. And then in my pots, I do feed my pots like once a month, and that's it.
What do you feed them?
Because it's like a fish-based fertilizer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fish-based.
I like that. We're kind of that way too. Even if it is something that Mike's growing, if it's like that, we just throw it over the fence and the deer get to eat that, or the chickens, or something that wants the bugs, or all of them. The chicken will go through, get the bugs, and then the deer will eat the rest of it. Because, yeah, we don't like to spray. I agree with you there. So then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, definitely just looking at it every day. So now I have to look at my garden, you know, I walk around with my coffee and I look at my garden and imagine, you know, I'm tweaking it in my mind and just, I love, that's why winter is so frustrating, because you go outside even on a nice day and nothing is different. But in the growing season, like now, it's such a thrill because I go out every day and something is different. And now I get to check one of my other five other gardens too. So that's a thrill. You know, just enjoying the garden and scheming for changes is kind of my passive top thing to do. I would say my top thing to do that's more active is renewal pruning. You know, tackling, like I mentioned before, a big overgrown shrub and bringing it back to life. And you know, it's fascinating to me because it's not like sculpture where you're with clay where you're making it a certain shape. All you can do with in pruning is encourage a plant to grow a certain way. And you have to know how it grows. You have to know where the growth hormones are. And so it's, you know, and it evolves over time, and you have to be patient. So I just find that fascinating.
Wow, there is a lot to think about it. My mom just makes it look easy. But, you know, I'm not the best at paying attention to that. She did send me this awesome pair of Felco pruners for Christmas that I went out there to cut flowers and the lilacs, and I just couldn't believe how smooth. Like, it just made, it just was a game changer. So do you have a favorite pair of pruners that you like to use?
Well, I have a couple of different hand pruners, all different brands, but my big thrill lately in the tool department is that I got my first ever really excellent lopper. It's by Fiskars, and oh my God, I mean, it just, you know, with no effort at all, it'll go through, you know, branches that are, I don't know, a couple of inches thick, just like butter. It's just, so that's a big thrill. I don't know why I had struggled with a bad lopper for so many years. When a lopper that does a great job, you can have, you know, for $35 or something. So that's my new fave.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what you were talking about if my mom hadn't gave me those pruners. And that's the best way to describe it. It's like cutting through butter. It's just like dreamy. So what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Well, I think it's to get help. Whether it's paid help, help you have to pay for, or from a friend. I just think, in my community here and the last one I lived in too, we organized little garden visits, like consultations, just a bunch of experienced gardeners will go and this was all for free. We're just helping the other club members, you know, improve their gardens. But we would all go and it was really kind of fun because we're touring the person's yard and we're all discussing among ourselves what we would do here and there. And that would be my top tip is to have, again, another set of eyes, and in fact, more than one set, have a couple of experienced gardeners come over. Even if it's not a professional designer. So to get some other ideas and maybe especially if you're doing something like pruning, to definitely have someone show you if you can, or go to a demonstration. I know their master gardeners will have workshops and demonstrations on pruning, and that's something that you really, I think, really have to learn in person. So in person help is my big tip.
Well, my mom, I told her, make me a list of things I can say besides, I love that, because not only that, like, so my husband and I kind of, like I was saying, like, she finally looked at my free garden course, and what, like, chapter 3 is building relationships and talking to your neighbors and talking to your gardeners, and here you are, you're saying the same thing again, and then I just interviewed one of my listeners, and it's her second year. And last year, so they just bought these 2 acres up here. She moved from California to Idaho, and she didn't talk to her neighbors. And that's what she says now. She's like, I wish I would have talked to the organic neighbors, because I talked to the nurseries and they said put in Kentucky bluegrass and it needs a ton of water. And I wish I wouldn't have done that. And now I'm struggling with like weeds and this grass that needs so much water. And so it's exactly perfect advice. Like, you couldn't be telling people, like, I think that's the best. So how about,
I was going to say this. Something else is that you reminded me of it because you saw that my nonprofit about lawn care. So lawn has long been one of my top interests as a garden writer, because I really think that if you look at the big picture in this country, homeowners do, I think, more environmental harm through bad lawn care than any other single practice. And it's really they're making their lawns much more perfect and uniform and weed free and green than they need to be. So I'm a big proponent of encourage people to have what I call a good enough lawn, or a freedom lawn. That's a term I love, for a lawn that's, you know, it's a mix of weeds and which is fine. And even the extension services are finally starting to talk about when they give lawn care advice, the really good ones like Cornell are saying, well, okay, if you're managing a golf course or a country club, maybe you need to do these things. But most people, this low maintenance, low input treatment, organics, of course, is going to be good enough for you. And so, so don't jump when the ads are on TV in the spring telling you to run out and buy some product, synthetic fertilizer to green up your lawn. You don't need to do that. And that's how actually the fertilizers over fertilizing on the lawn, it does more harm to our waterways than the pesticides themselves. So, and people are surprised by that. So I'm always encouraging people to go easy on their lawn, that they can have a decent lawn without doing harm to the environment and without a lot of money and a lot of work. And they just set their sights at a reasonable level and find a good source of guidance. Like, Maryland has a good extension service and Cornell. Those are the two in the East that I recommend the most.
Cornell, is that like upstate New York, like the university?
In Ithaca. Yeah. Yes, Ithaca.
Cool. Yep. That's part of why I reached out to you to talk about stuff like that. Because that is so true. And especially just more droughts and more wildfires and just, it just only makes sense. Plus, one thing that like somebody pointed out on my podcast and like just really been standing out to me is like, that's where your dogs run. That's where your kids learn to mm-hmm. crawl. That's where your toddlers right. are. Like, it's the worst place you want to have anything that's not really earth friendly, healthy.
Yeah. Right.
And then a healthy soil isn't going to need water. So, whatever you can do to help make your lawn or landscape, even whatever it is, healthier, then you shouldn't need that stuff, mm-hmm. I think. So,
I was just going to say, I'm in the East where there's enough rain. So, it's reasonable for us to have lawn. I don't know what I would do if I were in a really dry part of the country, because talk about about kids on the lawn. It's people with kids are especially need lawn for them to play on. And I don't know what you do out West, to have a lawn in a fairly sustainable way, but it's pretty easy here in the East where we have enough rain. So I'm not anti lawn at all. I'm just anti, putting too much product on the lawns.
I don't know. My mom's in the East and every single neighbor in her place, everywhere we went, has like a sprinkler system that pops up every morning. So they're still watering like crazy, whether they have.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. That they don't need to. Well, I think we if we adjusted our expectations, we would see that it's normal for lawns here to go green. To go brown in the heat of the summer. One phrase I've heard is brown is the new green. So if you have a bright green lawn in August, you're doing something wrong.
I like that. Brown is the new green.
Green, yes.
because it's like green, like environmentally green, right?
Right,
That's cute. So was your favorite tool the loppers, or did you have a different favorite tool that you wanted to mention?
No, I'm going with loppers, yes.
Cool. How about a favorite internet resource besides Garden Rant? And, well, we'll make sure we put the links to those other, to all those websites.
Yeah.
In the show notes.
Yeah, good gardening videos. And they're not my videos. We found about we've selected about over 800 videos by all sorts of people. And I mean, there are fabulous YouTube channels now, especially for growing vegetables. Like, there's a one in the Chicago area called One Yard Revolution. He's just outstanding. And there's one, it might even be nearer to you, it's called Alberta Urban Garden. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Somewhere in Alberta, and he's just does excellent work, and they're both very very up on the research, and they're just excellent teachers. So I encourage people to find the best, find some really good YouTubers that grow what you're trying to grow and follow them. I think Margaret Roach does a great job. She's her blog, A Way to Garden, is just excellent. And let me see what else. And I mean, I like everything Joe Lample does. So that's enough. That's enough examples.
Yeah. Well, but what you're saying is really true, because you can get lost in the internet and like curating it and vetting it and figuring out what is quality and what you should listen to, because there's a lot of conflicting, mm-hmm. Information out there. Mm-hmm. So that's so true. Mm-hmm. And then, we still get Joe Lample like every Saturday morning. I was kind of thinking, like, it was so funny when I interviewed him, I was kind of embarrassed because I have that question at the end about creating a greener world. And then I was thinking, well, you know what? I probably came up with that question because I was probably sitting here like writing my thing out. He was probably on the TV and it kind of like probably kind of sunk into my subconscious or something, or I don't know.
Yeah.
It was funny, but I've been thinking because I do like, I love to watch his show on Saturday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why people aren't on TV, because they're getting it on YouTube.
Yeah. But one more internet source that's just great. It's a Facebook group called The Garden Professors. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I have not heard of them.
Really? So it's a science-based group, and so, well, evidence-based. So it's like, I don't know, if maybe 10,000-15,000 people now around the world, and it's people who ask questions or post items that are about gardening that are based in evidence as opposed to ideology or anecdote. And so I have a lot of respect for that. I mean, you really have to know if you post something, you'd better have the research that you can link and say, here's the research to back up what I'm saying, because they're pretty strict. But it's a great source. I go to them whenever I have a question. And so it might be a little bit insider, but if you do have a question that you want, something that you've seen conflicting advice about, that would be a really good place to get your question answered. And people would cite you the research to back up what they're saying.
Awesome. I'm going to check that out because I like research-based information about taking care of our planet for sure. I even like one of my very first YouTube videos that I made was I got it off of 350.org's website on how to explain climate change really simply. Like they have like this little climate change primer. And so I just kind of broke down and read it in like the most basic way I thought that I could, because they talk about, a lot of people don't want to talk about climate change because they don't understand the science. And so this was just a really simple way to understand the basics of what's going on, why you should care, what, simple things you can do. So I'm really going to have to check that out. The Garden Professors. Excellent. What's your favorite reading book or magazine or blog or website that you want to recommend?
Well, I learned to garden partly from Fine Gardening magazine. I find, and it's still excellent. I know the editor there, and I have a lot of respect for his process, that he doesn't just hire a writer and assign them a topic. He will choose a topic and then find the most knowledgeable person on that topic, and then take care of the editing. So he's not. So I think they're very committed to finding the best sources. So that's a good one. What else am I reading? I don't really read garden books anymore. I'm embarrassed to say that because I have so many friends who have written gardening books, but I guess I'm just, I'm doing now instead of reading about it.
Well, that's good to know, because I mean, at a certain point, you kind of get it. You probably sounds like you've done so much. You've probably read a lot and know a lot, and like, I think that's great to be doing it. So, all right. Well, here's my final question: If there's one change that you would like to see to create a greener world, Susan, what would it be? For example, is there a charity organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either in your local area, nationally, or globally?
Well, it has to be climate change. There's just no getting away from that. And so I think even though this is a discouraging time to be living in this country on this topic, just anything you can do to get people in office who will do something about climate change. So at all levels of government. So it isn't just about who's in charge of the EPA, but or even who your congressperson is. You can do things, at the state level and locally. So I would say, yeah, we need people who are elected who will do something about it.
My question that my mom and I were talking a lot about, because she's like onto this big try to get people to vote campaign. Like, yes. I think she's even at dinner with the League of Women Voters as we speak for the first time ever tonight. Like,
wow.
And just like, yeah, she started this little group and they're like just, you know, really into the, what can we do? And they've been talking about, like, the League of Women Voters came and talked to, like, her group of friends and stuff, and they were saying that they're really having a hard time reaching the millennials. And I'm so curious, like, why aren't the millennials voting? Mm-hmm. Like, what can we do to get them interested? And I think what you say that at the state level is, important too, or even locally, and like how you're affecting change by just talking to the people that are growing in your city. Like, maybe some people haven't really thought about that. Oh, who are my city landscapers? Who takes care of the city thing? And like having an impact on that. So, well, you know, I love this answer. So, how about just not that you haven't been just like full of inspiration, like your passion is just coming through. I know people are going to love this interview because you sound a lot like my avatar. So how about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Oh gosh. What would get people to garden? Well, that's been my whole thing all these years. How do you motivate people to start gardening? I think they're overwhelmed. I think, and I remember when I was starting out with my first garden, I was overwhelmed. Let's see. So that's why I focus on helping people get started, because it's overwhelming. So if I would suggest anyone who does garden, who wants to help other people, someone that they know to start gardening, is to help them in a hands-on kind of way, you know, show them how to draw a little border, you know, around their lawn, and put a big plant in the corner, and a little color, and just get started. You know, even if it's just starting a small, you know, tackling a small part of their yard first. But so in terms of beauty, you know, ornamentals, which is my passion, I'd like to just kind of hold people's hand and get them started so that they start to get the big payoff, which is creating beauty and seeing plants grow really, really well. You know, when it comes to growing food, that's another. I would be no good at inspiring people to grow food, since I'm not a cook myself. So I'll leave that to people like you who really know how to grow food and cook with it after you harvest.
Well, it's funny because I don't really grow very much food at all. My husband really does that part. I'm kind of more like you. I mostly just stick to like sunflowers and easy things because, I mean, I've probably learned it, and especially since I started my podcast, like I say, like if I had to keep us alive, like if something happened and there was no more stores, I think that I could probably grow food. Like in last year, I had a guinea pig in my classroom. So Mike built me some little things and I learned that I really was doing a lot more to keep the lettuce and everything alive, because I had like an emergency come up and I had to have a sub for 3 days. And when I came back, all the lettuce was just dead. And I was so surprised. I'm like, kids, you didn't water, but I guess they were just, you know, so used to me doing it. Like none of us really realized. So, I'm like that too. I'm always like, start small. I would just have like a little kitchen garden. Like what Mike does is way, like, I'm always amazed. I'm like, how do you do all this? And how do you get like it to grow? So I'm the eater. I do like to cook and I do like to eat the vegetables in the garden. That's my big thing. So he grows a lot for me, which is sweet. So anyway, do you want to tell people how to connect with you? Like, we know there's gardenrant.com, right? Is it .com or .org? .com. And then what are the other websites?
Goodgardeningvideos.org. And I have another one here for if you're ever visit Washington, D.C. We have like 16 public gardens in the D.C. area. And I created a website called dcgardens.com where you can see what the gardens look like every month of the season, because people here, they tend to think that, oh, there's nothing to see here in D.C. Except for the cherry blossoms in the spring. So at D.C. Gardens, you can see what our gardens look like throughout the year. And there's also a lot of resources for local gardeners. Let's see. So what else is that? I think that covers it, those three websites.
Well, I got to tell you, what I saw today on the Good Gardening Videos and on Garden Rant was pretty informative. So I'm definitely going to encourage listeners to get out there and check out Susan's blogs and check out her video or the video website and just connect with her if you have a question, it sounds like. And so thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us today and just spreading lots of knowledge and encouraging people. Maybe they're kind of like you and they're not into growing vegetables, or that's just like kind of over their thing now. They'll be inspired to try just some landscaping type of things, and just playing, your passion just comes through so much. I know it's going to incite people to get out there and even do some weeding.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Jackie. It's been fun. I really enjoyed listening to your episodes with other people. I think you're doing a great job. So I'm happy to be a part of it.
Well, thank you. Hey, Green Future Growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So you just, it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today.
Seed Voyage makes it easy to connect home food growers with the eaters who appreciate the flavor and freshness of ultra-local produce. Sign up for free at seedvoyage.com as a grower and offer some of your delicious surplus to members in the community. You'll be able to share your passion and make a few bucks. Eaters, sign up and see the amazing things being grown all around you. It might be the best and only way to try those Cherokee purple tomatoes and black nebula carrots you've been reading about. Seed Voyage, a farm in every yard.
Hey there, Green Future Growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.